I think the best thing we can do is ensure, to sort of the point I made a minute ago, that we're providing the computational infrastructure, everything else, to a broad set of research organizations, so that the ability to develop these models is not held only within a small group, but it can be developed more broadly. Now, there's a lot of challenges around open source. We're still sorting a lot of that out. There's all these questions about IP rights. It's so hard to kind of land in a definitive place.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also negatively impact our workforce and national security. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We have had industry leaders, we have had government officials, we have had leaders of advocacy groups, and together they try to address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Steve Mills with us today. He's the Global Chief AI Ethics Officer for Boston Consulting Group. He's also their Global AI Lead for Public Sector and a recognized expert for responsible AI. I invited him on this show as we want to have many voices that can create practical legislation. And having a voice from a consulting giant that's working with industry is very important. Welcome, Steve. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
So, Steve, let's just jump into it. How can AI legislation balance the need for innovation, which obviously is driving this sector, with making sure that we have ethical and responsible AI in the development?
The way I think about this, as you start thinking about kind of the interplay between regulation, which is effectively a type of guardrail, and innovation, clear guardrails can actually be accelerators of innovation. The biggest thing that slows it is uncertainty. And so what's going on there? One of my colleagues used this great race car analogy, so bear with me for a second. But if you ask the public, why do race cars go so fast? They'll tell you the engine or the aerodynamics or whatever. If you ask the drivers, they will tell you it's because I have really good brakes that I trust. And so same idea here. If you have teams and companies that understand guardrails, they can actually move really, really quick and innovate quickly, but they know when to stop, when to pause, when to ask questions, when to have deeper discussion. And we've seen this play out with AI. We did a survey with MIT, and we looked at companies that were at different levels of responsible AI maturity. And those with more mature programs actually reported significantly faster innovation than those without. And so this idea holds. So stepping back now, so what does that mean for policymakers? One, I would urge them taking a thoughtful approach to create requirements that are reasonable to implement. And so, consultation with industry is important, and we can talk more about that. But sort of being thoughtful in the approach they take so that it's something that industry can actually implement. But then quickly set clear standards and guidelines for how to meet those requirements. Because that's actually, in my mind, the biggest risk and to innovation is we have regulation, but nobody knows how to meet it or how regulators will hold people accountable to it. I don't think it's regulation in and of itself that will be a problem. I really do think it's the uncertainty around regulation that creates the problem.
You said a bunch of things in there that I want to follow up, but you made a great analogy. And obviously, there are a lot of copyright issues being floated around with AI, so I want to be careful. If I used your analogy, I hope you're not going to be too upset, because I love race cars myself. So anyway, great analogy. But Steve, you talked about uncertainty being the brake, so to speak. Now, we are in an election cycle. I've talked to many members of Congress and Senate, et cetera, and they tell me comprehensive legislation is not possible this year. You have, on the other hand, the EU AI Act, which will hopefully going to play next year. How is industry reacting to something like this? I mean, you have in some shape or form a little bit of a vantage point, or you talk to your friends and others across the board. What is the dynamic going on there?
I think every industry, every company is watching this closely. Really, everyone is fully expecting the AI Act to come into law and is really preparing for that. Whether the U.S. gets the comprehensive legislation or not, I think what we have seen in the U.S. is regulators applying existing regulation to AI. So regardless of whether there's comprehensive or not, we're seeing things like FDA applying medical device rule, fair housing laws and equal employment laws, all these things being applied to AI. We kind of think about it as like AI regulation isn't here yet. What it actually is, you know, particularly in regulated industries. But again, even in those places, there is still some uncertainty that folks are grappling with because they don't quite know, how do I ensure that I can demonstrate, you know, I'm meeting all the requirements of fair housing laws? And certainly there's law firms helping companies with this already. But I think there is a lot of that uncertainty on play, whether we have like single comprehensive AI specific regulation or not.
Just to carry that forward, would you recommend sector-wise regulation or just across the board regulation, Steve? What is your perspective? Some people have said, hey, every sector is different. There's some very critical sectors, some maybe not as critical sectors. What is your thought on that?
I do see the need for some sector-specific regulation because there are unique considerations. If you think about healthcare versus employment versus marketing, right? Very different requirements and concerns that would span those. But I'm kind of the mind that we shouldn't create regulation just to create regulation. And so if there's existing regulatory regimes that'll work, you should apply those. And I mean, that's the guidance the White House put out several years ago. First, look at what's already out there. Do we need to modify what's out there to fill gaps? And then say, okay, do we need a broad cross-industry, cross-cutting regulation? So in the end, I suspect it will be a both. I just think we can do it in a smart way that we're not just layering on more and more regulation, but we're taking what we have and building upon it, if that makes sense.
Just last point to carry forward on what you just said. Some of our guests have come in on the show from the government outside, said, we need a separate regulatory body like the IAEA or something like that. What is your thought? Do we need a separate agency or regulatory body, or do we think we already have all those mechanisms in place?
I'm always torn with this question because I do see a lot of value in such a thing. International coordination and consistent harmonized standards, and the list goes on and on. That said, it would take years to get something like that put in place. And this is a now problem. And I just don't think we can operate in, you know, regulatory uncertainty for years more. I don't think it's what the public wants. I don't think it's practical. So as much as I think in many ways it's a great idea, I also think it's a bit of an impractical idea. Now, maybe we can get there eventually, but in the interim, we need a solution that will work, whether that's taking existing, you know, like data privacy regulators in some nations and give them this charge. You know, whether it's, you know, splitting it across the domain specific, like I think all that has to be thought out. But if you, I guess to me, the single most helpful thing is sort of consistency, knowing who's going to do it. That's clear to everyone. We all know who has final say and how we're actually going to implement the regulations we have.
So Steve, one thing I gather coming from you is you would like consistency, certainty, because that, the opposite of that really hurts everybody.
Yeah.
AI is a technology that is evolving dramatically. So when you start, let's say, even last year, large language models, then you now have agents, then you have multimodal. I mean, now in the past week, we've had all kinds of news coming out that AGI could be coming in relatively soon. Relative is a very different word. How does Washington or whatever, Cap Russell, et cetera, build policy that can keep pace with the dramatic evolution of this technology?
I mean, yeah, it's a great question. And I think there's sort of the two philosophical approaches we're seeing in Europe, very much thinking about the people developing the models and how do we ensure that they're putting in place the right procedures to ensure that it's done in a sort of responsible way, consistent with public good values, you know, societal norms, et cetera. I think the U.S., generally speaking, is taking more of an outcomes-based approach to say, we're going to look at the outcomes of these systems, and if they cause disparate impact or harms in some way, then we're going to regulate that in essence. I actually think both can work. It's just, again, if you think about what I said, it's focusing on the approach to how we build things, what we disclose, how we disclose it, the outcomes of the systems. It's not tied to the technology specifically. So I think I'm not saying it's perfect, but I think we're getting to an actually reasonably good place that to some extent will be insulated from technology developments. Now, that's not to say we're not going to have to evolve regulations over time. I think that's just the reality. I mean, even at corporate levels, I talk to companies about how this is not, you know, when you set your AI policy, it's not like other policies that you set it once and look at it in a decade. You might have to revisit it relatively frequently. I think regulation will to some extent be the same. I think it's important that there's a clear process by which that will be done, you know, with the right consultations, et cetera. And it's done in a bit of a predictable way. So folks understand it's coming. They know the requirements. It's not the regulation specifically. It's more the standards we're going to be held to related to the regulation. And I think you can evolve the regulation, but while still being clear on, okay, what does it mean? How are we going to know that you're complying with this regulation?
Just to follow on, because you are obviously an optimistic in terms of that our regulations are going to keep evolving, et cetera. A lot of members of Congress are not, we don't expect members of Congress to have an AI degree. Now, there are a couple of them who do, but they're not. Is that a concern that maybe we have this transformative technology, we are building regulations, but we need to also have a knowledge and awareness of something like this?
I think that's a great point. And this is where a lot of the discussion around needing a dedicated regulatory agency comes to play, because then you have a source of expertise. I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure we're building that expertise within governments so that you have senior folks across government that understand AI, the unique risks, the unique benefits, all those aspects, to give a source of expertise that, you know, regulators, policymakers can tap into. I also think realistically, consultation with industry is important. I do see that as something that's important. Now, it needs to be done in a thoughtful way. It needs to be maintained independence, et cetera. But speaking to the companies, both building the core technology, but also implementing the operational use cases is important. It's important to build that level of understanding of what does that look like? How is that done? Also to build an understanding of what is the regulatory burden we could create so that you're making an informed decision. The decision may be that added burden is worth it, but it's just important to understand and be able to have a sense of, as we put the regulations in place, what happens? How are these companies going to handle it?
Great point. Steve, I'm going to have you wear your responsible AI global leader hat, if it's okay with you. From your standpoint, what ethical considerations do you believe are most crucial when you're deploying some of these AI technologies?
So I'll start and say, what do I think it means to have a system be responsible? And I think about four dimensions. There's having it be trustworthy. And what I mean is produces accurate, complete, factually correct, reliable outputs. So that's two, that it's harmless, meaning respects individual rights, social norms, guards against harms to individuals, to society. To be clear, driving harm to complete zero is aspirational. So I use the term harmless cautiously, but that's the aspiration, obviously. It needs to be secure, both in terms of data leakage, in terms of malicious actors, and then legal, of course. So when I think about a responsible system, that's the scope. As I sort of alluded to, it's not possible to drive risk completely to zero. Very, very low, of course, with the right testing and everything else. But if you think about, for example, Gen AI and the point you made earlier, we continue to discover new capabilities in this system, both good and malicious cases. And so to say we can get zero risk is just not true. So if that's all the different considerations we need to think about, to me, what's imperative is companies are having a dialogue to say, is the benefit of deploying this system worth the residual risk? Whatever, and we can understand, what do we believe the residual risk is? How bad is it? In some cases, you might find that the answer is yes. It'll lead to a discussion to say, no, actually, no. You know, yeah, there's a little bit of business benefit here, but we could potentially create harm for customers and it's not worth it. I think that's a different kind of a dialogue than a lot of organizations have had in the past, but that's how you get to this outcome I think we're hoping for.
So following up on that, what regulatory measures do you think need to be in place to make sure that we address bias, fairness, and also equity for different socioeconomic groups in these systems?
Well, I mean, I think at the core, you know, there's look at the input data of these systems, look at the output of these systems, and evaluate for bias and fairness issues. That's sort of well understood. Obviously, that should happen. I would say, though, also, we need to look at how the systems are designed and then how we're taking the outputs of those systems and integrating them into, you know, decision processes or business processes. So what I mean by how the system's designed, the point, I guess, to step back for saying, the point I'm making is bias can be introduced in sort of full value chain. I think we tend to focus on the data, on the algorithm. But if you think about how you're designing a system, are you creating it in a way that only certain subsets of the population have access to it in the first place? You know, if you think about, say, something like a smartphone, we know that certain socioeconomic groups have lower rates of smartphone ownership than others. And so you have to think about how are we designing the system and making sure that it's actually accessible, that the full population is reaping the benefits. And then on the other end, as you take the outputs and then action it, we can do all these things to create fair outcomes. But if then there's a human taking that and introducing human bias on top of it, that just is problematic. And so there's a whole piece around user training and awareness of these issues. I guess that's, as I'm thinking about it, that's what needs to happen if we really want to try to get to a place where for a given system, we're thinking about bias fairness.
About a week or maybe 10 days ago, IMF released a study that got a lot of play, which I don't know if you're familiar with. They talked about the impact on workforce with AI. And it varies from industrial countries to maybe less industrial countries. And there's talks that in the United States, 60% of the workforce could be impacted. Now, the Biden executive order also talks about the urgent need to bring in the AI talent, whether it's globally or reskilling, et cetera. So workforce is a big issue. A lot of conversation has happened. And when you do polling for people, that's a big concern among the people. What are your thoughts and what can regulators do, whether it's reskilling, getting the best talent? Because, hey, other countries are also not sitting behind, whether it's a France, which has now got its open source, you know, systems. You've got Germany. Obviously, there's China. So talk a little bit about workforce, and if members of Congress are listening, what can they do for this?
In my mind, there's, I guess, two big key issues that we need to think about. One is exactly what you said, which is AI literacy, upskilling and reskilling, exposure to technology early, STEM education, all these things from sort of a policymaker's perspective is making sure we're funding these things and making sure we're doing it in such a way that all groups have access. And I think this starts very young. We believe in a future in which critical for our you know, personal economic success is our ability to work effectively with like an AI co-pilot. Folks that interact with that technology generally, but that technology from a young age, are obviously going to be inherently advantaged. And then to the point I made earlier, we know that there's disparate access to those technologies. So we need to start addressing those issues now, right from the youngest level. So there's a whole sort of educational component. There's the reskilling, upskilling piece of making sure that as we see populations impacted, we're giving them skills, not just to get another job, but to actually ideally help them get jobs in AI or technology jobs, or, you know, we're doing it in such a way that we're not just sort of moving people from one displaced career to another displaced career. And maybe the last thing I would say is ensuring that the people developing AI are educated on these issues, that are thoughtful about these issues, because they're making these design decisions. They're weighing, should we or should we not build these systems, to be thinking about, you know, not simply, oh, is this going to create a lot of efficiency, but what's going to be the impact on the workforce and what should we do about that and drive a bigger discussion within companies about it? I think that becomes extraordinarily important. And if from a policy perspective, we're also making sure that the research dollars, the research infrastructure is getting in the hands of historically underrepresented institutions, that will have a profound impact on kind of the AI builder community as well.
I think you made a great point where the builders of the system also should be thinking the impact. And we have builders of some of these systems coming in. I'll be asking them that question for you, Steve. Steve, conversation which kind of relates to monopoly about open systems, closed systems, and also there's two camps. Also, the worry that, like social media, this should not get consolidated in their hands. And I've talked to members of Congress, and they're very worried. It should not be the Magnificent Seven, so to speak, that this gets in. What are your thoughts? Open source, monopolies, et cetera.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
It's sort of a tough question. I mean, there's a bunch of organizations, obviously, have the resources, the expertise to build these systems. I think the best thing we can do is ensure, to sort of the point I made a minute ago, that we're providing the computational infrastructure, everything else, to a broad set of research organizations, so that the ability to develop these models is not held only within a small group, but it can be developed more broadly. Now, there's a lot of challenges around open source. We're still sorting a lot of that out. There's all these questions about IP rights. It's so hard to kind of land in a definitive place. But I do not see it as a bad thing if we take policy steps to ensure that additional research institutions have access to the computational infrastructure. We think about, as a nation, how do we generate data sets to train these systems in a scalable way? There's so much we can do, as opposed to saying like these folks shouldn't develop it or it all has to be open source, but to say, let's create a full ecosystem that sort of involves everybody.
Yeah, because building this large language model is very expensive. I was looking at this chart. Meta has got $20 billion worth of NVIDIA hardware. Not too many startups, unless you're a Mistral or others, can do that. And I think that's the point that you're making. Steve, should companies have a legal duty to disclose when AI is being used by them?
Yeah, my view is that companies have a duty to disclose within reason. And that sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. So let me explain. I mean, as use of AI, particularly Gen AI, becomes more and more prevalent and kind of normalized, I don't know that we need to disclose every little situation. If you see an ad on TV now, I frankly just assume Gen AI is somehow involved in the creative behind that ad. I don't think we need to disclose that. But when AI is used for decision-making, when it's, say, underlying a chatbot that customers are interacting with, any direct interaction or decisioning involving people, I think, yes, companies should absolutely disclose. And frankly, they shouldn't need to be compelled by regulation to do that. Transparency and customer trust really go hand in hand. And so being proactive can do a lot to build customer trust. And I referenced the survey we had done with MIT. This is one of the things we looked at. And what we found is those folks with strong, responsible AI programs reported better long-term profitability, better customer retention, all these benefits that tie back to this point. My point to companies is always be motivated, because obviously it's the right thing to do. There's clear business benefits. I mean, regulation should just be secondary. I mean, from my view, it's just you should be doing it because it's a benefit to you to do it.
It is a big benefit. I agree. Steve, final question. Our podcast is watched by members of Congress, their staff, think tanks, etc. What is the most important message or advice that you would like to convey to policymakers, think tanks, as they navigate the complex landscape of AI regulation?
I guess my advice would be quick but thoughtful, which sounds... I know. And to the thoughtful piece, I think it's engage all of industry. And when I say all of industry, what I mean is don't just go out and talk to the kind of 1% of companies that are AI first, but also talk to 99% of other companies that are actually the ones building, deploying operational use cases, and understand their challenges, the risks they're thinking about, what the regulatory burden could be for them. So kind of engage the community. And of course, academia, other government agencies as well, but engage broadly to be thoughtful in the approach. But then once you kind of have your handle on around that, move as quickly as possible to get the regulations you want in place and to create the standards around those regulations. And it goes kind of back to my first point around the uncertainty being a challenge. We obviously want good regulation that meets the goals that regulators have, but then once you make the decision, try to move quick and give us standards that we can do the right thing. We know we're going to adhere to the rule of the regulation you set forth.
Great points. But Steve, in Washington, we don't do quick. But anyway, that's a whole separate issue. But Steve, thank you so much. So wonderful insight. Thanks for taking the time. Really, really valuable. And it'll get fed out to our members. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.